Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 19th of January, the day that we honor the life and the work of Dr. Martin Luther King. All things political, and there is so much to talk about today. We will, of course, look at the life of Dr. Martin Luther King this hour, and you can't help but tie it into all that's going on this week, the Marvelous Concert. We Are One that took place yesterday at the Lincoln Memorial, which I hope many of you had a chance to see. This day of national service and whether or not this will become an ongoing theme of the Obama administration and will more people serve. This morning, the president-elect made an unscheduled visit to Walter Reed Army Medical Center to visit with troops in battle. And there are some interesting private dinners taking place tonight to honor the public service of former Secretary of State Colin Powell and also one for Senator John McCain. Those will be held this evening. And then, of course, tomorrow, the historic inauguration of President Barack Obama. Our guest this hour has been participating and is participating in our show this morning. There was an interesting program last week at Yale University, and they're holding commemorative events over the course of more than a week surrounding today's national holiday. Our guest has said, "What my grandparents worked for was bigger than one election or one candidate or one party." Our guest, a professor of African American Studies and Political Science at Yale. When we talk about having won this victory, I hope we can talk about the fact that black politics has never been about one issue. Joining us this hour to talk about Dr. Martin Luther King and all things political taking place this week is Professor Kalaiba Brown Dean, a professor of political science and African American studies at Yale University, a resident fellow of the Institute for Social and Policy Studies, and a research fellow at the Macmillan Center for International and Area Studies at Yale. In 2005, she convened a national conference in honor of the Voting Rights Act of 1965. Titled Lessons from the Past and Prospects for the Future, and she specializes in American politics, mass political behavior, criminal justice, and political psychology, has published work on voting rights, perceptions of bias in the criminal justice system, civic engagement, and the race education nexus, and has done a great deal of commentary for national media, important national media, and other international media outlets. We'll be welcoming your phone calls, and I'm sure that you'll have a lot to say about what has already happened, the train trip that took place, yesterday's concert, the events today of national service, and your hopes for a new administration. Professor Brown Dean, thank you so much for being with us today. It's a special day in this country.
Good morning, and thanks for having me.
Yeah, our pleasure. I was listening to the news on the way in, and Archbishop Desmond Tutu was talking at a prayer breakfast this morning about comparing this moment in American history to the election of Nelson Mandela in South Africa, which I thought was a very striking thing to say. Do you think that there are similarities?
I think it's definitely an important comparison and a useful one. I will always remember seeing the long lines of people waiting to cast a ballot for the first time when Nelson Mandela was elected. And it really reminded me of some of the images throughout this campaign of seeing people who were willing to wait in line for 3 hours, 4 hours, voting for the first time and saying that they too wanted to be a part of history. And so I think at this moment in the United States, we're reflecting that commitment to justice and the desire to really uphold democracy in its truest form.
Mm-hmm. And it's been such an uplifting weekend to watch that concert yesterday. For the one time, I'm glad we had cable HBO at our house. But it was an extraordinary concert. It was just beautiful, so well done. And the images, it just doesn't get much better than that when you look at the hope of America, does it?
No, I watched the concert and I said to my husband, this is who we are at our best as a country and as a nation, to see people of various ethnic backgrounds, various countries of origin, talk about the history of this nation, and then look forward, where do we go in the future? That, to me, was so significant. And to have it fall during this Martin Luther King celebration weekend as well, all of those moments in history being threaded together during that concert.
Mm-hmm. The president-elect said yesterday, we are going to have a tough year in 2009, and he even went beyond 2009. The good news is we're getting a consensus around what needs to be done. Really, two questions here. Will it be a tough couple years, do you think? And number two is, do you think that he has been able to build some kind of consensus already?
Well, I think that President-elect Obama has done a wonderful job of building consensus across party lines, across ideological orientations. But I hope that we as citizens will also be very clear in our expectations and realistic in our expectations. I don't think we can expect President Obama to erase in 4 years what has happened to this country over the last 8 years and beyond. We're facing very difficult times, times that, you know, are really unknown to many of us. And we have to be patient in that and understand that there will be very tough choices that have to be made.
You said at a special panel last week at Yale that Obama must find the balance between pragmatic, opportunistic coalitions that will win re-election and not forgetting the agenda of the people who voted him into office in the first place.
Mm-hmm. I think it is important, and I think it's a challenge. You know, a number of people were very concerned about some of his selections, both in terms of the administration and in terms of people who will be participating in the swearing-in ceremony. So, for the example, the selection of Rick Warren to give the prayer there. And a number of the students said to me, I was one of the people that was out for Obama. You know, my group, my community helped vote him in, and we really felt it was a slap in the face for him to select Rick Warren. So I think we have to understand that Obama is about bringing people together, people that may or may not have voted for him, but saying the election is passed, how do we move forward? How do we move this country forward? Mm-hmm. And I think that for him over the next 4 years, that will be a difficult balance to strike. Re-election is important for him, but it cannot be the central focus. It really has to be about meeting the needs of the people in this country.
Mm-hmm. What did you think about the selection of Rick Warren? Were you bothered by it or not?
I was concerned by that selection. I think that Rick Warren has been a very divisive figure, not just in this particular campaign, but on a number of different issues. I think that, you know, I'm thinking about the words of Dr. King and understanding that in order for this country to move forward, we have to include every citizen of this country and allow those voices to be heard. And to see a figure like Rick Warren, who is really silent, a lot of those voices through his various activities, that to me is bothersome. To think that in a time where people of various backgrounds, various faiths have felt silenced by his presence, I think Obama needs to be more sensitive to that.
Mm-hmm. One of your colleagues, of course, Elizabeth Alexander from Yale, is giving the poem tomorrow. I would assume that you know her. Do you have any inside information about what the poem will be tomorrow?
No, and you know, we're all excited, very proud of Elizabeth, you know, not surprised at all by the selection because she's a wonderful poet and a wonderful artistic voice. But we have not gotten any inside information, and, you know, as I recall, the Obama administration has not heard the poem. So we'll all be waiting to hear her words tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Are you going to the inauguration?
I will not, but I will be teaching. I'm teaching two classes tomorrow, and so that will be a central focus for the course so that the students can still see that, be a part of it, and talk about in a broader historical context what is the importance of this moment.
Mm-hmm. We were talking about that at the dinner table. I have a son in high school, and he had friends over yesterday, and they all go to the same school, and we were talking about whether or not it would be discussed, and they all said, well, our history teacher would let us watch. Our chemistry teacher may not let us watch this. And there was a call from the school board, Milwaukee School Board, last week to make this a moment. I'm wondering what will happen. I can't imagine as a teacher that you wouldn't be talking about this moment in American history tomorrow, no matter what you're teaching.
Right. And I think that this is a teachable moment for us at every level of education. I think it's particularly important given the ways that President-elect Obama has really reached out to young people and included them in this process, really for the first time, saying that your opinions matter, you matter, and let me meet you where you are. to, you know, be a president who has embraced technology via Facebook or MySpace or texting so that young people can come into that, I think we all have an obligation to continue that for our youth and make sure that they have a part in tomorrow's celebration as well.
And beyond tomorrow's celebration, we talked about service and with a guest, well, Jonathan Alter's column in Newsweek a couple weeks ago, we talked about that in a show that he called on President Obama to make sure that national service isn't just today, that it, he calls for it in the inaugural address and figures out some way to use that phenomenal list of supporters all over this country to ask them to do something for their country.
Right. And I think that, you know, looking at the issues facing our country and indeed facing our world, it's really important for us to return to that tradition of service, particularly given the fact that we're facing very tough economic times. What can we do as Americans, as members of this very diverse community, what can we do to make our communities better and to strengthen them? I think it's important for President Obama to let people know he's only one person. He cannot solve all of the issues facing our country. The task really is upon each of us to contribute to that, to make things better. And I think he needs to set that example and think about how can I use this list to really empower people and move us forward.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of the fact that there's a special dinner honoring John McCain tonight?
Well, you know, I was a little surprised by it at first, and then I thought, well, really, it's not so surprising to see Obama embrace Hillary Clinton the way that he has and to say that the election's over.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we all have a role to play here. Let's look beyond partisan labels. Let's look beyond sort of electoral camps and think about what is it that you're doing for this country? What have you done? And how can I learn from that? So I think that really speaks to Obama's nature and his character and the need to say that McCain may have lost the election, but that does not negate the important contributions that he's made to our country.
Do you think we've talked so much about how incredibly partisan this country has been for such a long period of time? Some of the overtures here have been remarkable. The fact that he has met with Republican leadership, he met at a special dinner at George Will's house, et cetera. Mm-hmm. How far do you think that's going? Is he really wooing people from the Republican side of the aisle, and successfully so?
Well, I think it has to be a two-way process. One, that Obama has to be willing to extend the invitation, but that Republicans and conservatives have to be willing to accept it. And so I think that dinner with the conservative members at Will's home is a sign of that, Obama making that effort. And then they have to be willing to accept it and really work with him, work with his administration to make sure that their views are included. The reality is that the people who are facing job losses in this country, you know, fall into every political category. It's not just Democrats who are losing their jobs. And so this is an opportunity for people to reach beyond those labels and instead focus on those issues.
Mm-hmm. Even Newt Gingrich this morning, I was listening to him on the radio, was talking about how this president-elect has done more than perhaps any other president-elect in the days before his inauguration to govern, to start governing.
And to hit the ground running,
yeah.
I think it's so important. You know, we are in a very unique time in this country in terms of the issues and the challenges facing us. And to, you know, I feel much more confident knowing that this new president knows about the issues, has assembled a remarkable team to help him navigate those issues. I'm excited to see what will come. And it may not be radical change in the first 100 days, but we at least know that he's thinking seriously about these issues and is willing to act on them in a way that no other president has been able to do.
Mm-hmm. You said at the Yale conference one of the days last week that seeing Obama win was deeply personal for you. How so?
Well, you know, I grew up in Virginia and always very aware and very active in politics, but somewhat pessimistic about where this country could go. And to see people in my home state talk about this election, regardless of their partisan orientation, but to say, this is history, this is a moment that I want to be a part of. And even if I don't support this particular candidate, I can understand why this is so significant. That made it personal for me. And I mentioned in that same program that my grandparents were very active in politics. Although they had a very limited education, they knew that for their children to do well, we had to make our voices heard in the political process, that that was our obligation. It wasn't sort of a privilege or an option for us. And so that made it personal. To have a daughter who was 4 months old at the time and to know that she was being born into a country that affirmed her worth, that also made it important for me.
Mm-hmm. We're going to welcome phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655. And our guest this hour is Professor Kalaiba Brown Dean, Professor of Political Science and African American Studies at Yale University. It's all things political. And of course, you know what we're talking about today, what happened over the weekend and what's happening today as we honor the life of Dr. Martin Luther King and what will happen tomorrow in America with the inauguration of the 44th President of the United States. Quite a week. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You can also send an email if you'd like, if you have a hard time getting through on 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to phone calls now for Professor Brown Dean and start with Steele from Nina. Hi, Steele.
Yes, good morning on this lovely day, but my mother's sister lives in Newport Beach, California, and they live in the millionaire area, and right before the election, she was, you know, my mother and I voted Democrat, but she said, oh, well, you know, listen to Rush Limbaugh, and she talks about the World Net Daily, she reads that, and I'm just looking, they're saying 58 million people voted for the other guy, and call on the citizenship investigation, and when people would talk about Barack, it would be Barack, and then always in italicized Hussein Obama, and just hopefully, you know, reaching it. But anyway, there's, you know, a huge, you know, 58 million people who didn't vote for the other guy, but I just hope, they're just stubborn, and I don't know. And, you know, we talk about global warming, and, you know, they just say, oh, you know, all the scientists, it's all a big conspiracy. And so our president-to-be in a day or two has a lot of work and a lot of stubborn people to sway.
Thank you, Steele, for your call. Professor Brown Dean?
Well, I think that the challenges facing President-elect Obama are enormous. But again, the challenges facing this country are enormous. And I think that given that we as a country have to be willing to come together and address those issues in order to move forward. If McCain had won, if Obama had won, those issues would be the same. And so I think that the task for Obama now is really to move from rhetoric to action and to show through his work, through his deeds and through his actions that he is the best candidate and that he can improve this country.
What about those forces that he mentioned, the anti-global warming, the Rush Limbaugh listeners, et cetera? Do you imagine there will still be a lot of venom directed against him? I'm wondering what will happen with that segment of American society right now.
I think that, you know, that may continue. I think that often those individuals would be disgruntled regardless of who was in that office. But again, I think that the expectations for President Obama are so high. And I think we need to be realistic in terms of what he can do as one person, as one president, in the 4 years or 8 years that he may have in order to do that. And I think what's also important is that we talk to our neighbors. We talk to our community members. It's not that we have to agree on everything, but that we're willing to be open and to experience and allow him to do his job.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Teal, for your call. Let's go to Nick from Bayfield. Hi, Nick.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, I'm just calling to make an observation about the, I guess, the nature of the election. You know, since then, I've been hearing it hailed a lot as, you know, such an amazing display of democracy and, you know, this type of grassroots movement that got him elected. Whereas, I guess my opinion is, having seen, you know, it come from the top down from the Democrat Party, I wouldn't consider it a grassroots election.
What do you mean from the top down?
Well, for example, I spent some time living in South America, and I got to see some actual, you know, grassroots movements happening in Ecuador and Bolivia, where, you know, people actually, you know, really did make their voices heard and you know, at any expense down there. But I would say from my observations in the United States, you know, I wouldn't say it's so much grassroots. He was able to get a lot of people together on his email list and through the internet, but it's more like those people are taking orders from the top down rather than him representing our views in a more democratic way.
Well, I think it, you know, remains to be seen whether he will be able to represent our views in a democratic way once he takes office. Then that task will really begin in terms of being able to see will the outcomes match our expectations. But I don't want us to undermine the significance of grassroots mobilization during this campaign, during the primaries and also during the general election. To see people who previously would not have been invited to those, you know, major party fundraisers being able to say, I have $5 and I want to give that $5 to the candidate that I believe in. It may not be the $500 that people are used to giving out, but this is what I have to give. And having that be recognized and included is very different for the United States. There's certainly various models of mobilization and grassroots organization that we can look to, but for the U.S., for the confines of our political structure, this was really a movement that was more about the people than the party, and the people saying, this is what I want, and you need to be accountable to that, and if not, mm-hmm. you can't have my vote.
Mm-hmm. And he has said that he keeps that in mind, that he will bring all the faces, all the thoughts, all the people he saw along the train route, the people yesterday, with him into the White House. And I guess he has to be held to that, right? Remember,
certainly.
Remember everybody.
Right. And I don't think that people will allow him to forget that at all. I think he, more than some other presidents, will be reminded mm-hmm. on a daily basis. I voted for you. My community supported you. What will you do for us? And that reminder is important not just for the president, but really for every elected official in this country to remember the people that got them into office and to, you know, honor that as well.
Mm-hmm. And as you were saying at the beginning of the hour, Professor Brown Dean, there is something different about the faces that we've been seeing who lined the train tracks, who waited in 5-degree temperatures for hours to hear him in Baltimore, all the people at the Lincoln Memorial yesterday, when the cameras would take a look at the crowds, these are hard times. And look at all of these people who were just filled with hope. He's given a lot of people that, and that's no small task.
That excitement and that energy to be at a political event and have the same sort of electric energy that you would see at a formal, you know, say, rock concert mm-hmm. was important. You couldn't look at that crowd and pigeonhole that crowd and say, well, they must represent this constituency or they must come from this particular background. That crowd really crossed age lines, which is important, crossed gender, crossed ethnicities, mm-hmm. crossed regions of the country, which is also important, to say that I, too, sing America, even if it may be in a different key from the person next to me.
Right. Let's thank you, Nick, for your call. We go next to Jim from Milwaukee. Hello, Jim.
Yeah, hi. There was an old song back in the day which talked about lovey-dovey, lovey-dovey all the time. But I think that our view is tempered by reality. So, and there are three things, it seems to me, that we lack. We lack money because the Republicans have stolen so much of it in different ways. We lack accountability. People like Eliot Spitzer lose their job, and rightfully so, but people like David Vitter and Larry Craig keep their positions. And the third lack is lack of communication. There's a new book out by Bill Bishop called The Big Sword, Why the Clustering of Like-Minded America is Tearing Us Apart. I think people ought to take a look at that because the tendency is for people to listen to points of view that confirm their previously held views in the first place. And I'd also add to look at Milwaukee Magazine, the article on Charlie Sykes and how he engineers things so that there really is no free discussion in talk radio. So we have to fight to restore the fairness doctrine because, unlike public radio, most stations don't have fairness. And we have to have ways to engage people because otherwise we can't get the knuckleheads to listen.
Professor Brown-Dean.
I think it's an important comment and really speaks to what we need to do as a country. As I said, you know, something that I always tell my students, I'm not here to tell you how to think. I'm just here to encourage you to think and to be open to views that may not fit your own. So that you don't, you know, we all come in with these preconceived notions about democracy, about our country, about elections, about the presidency. But to be open to new experiences and to new ideas, it may just affirm what you already believe, but it may challenge that. And I think that we need to be willing to be challenged and not just accept politics as usual, but also understand that there's a space for the expression of all of these views.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for the call. We have a couple lines open if you'd like to join our conversation. It's all things political, and what a week it is in Washington and what a weekend it has been. So if you'd like to comment on the wonderful concert that took place yesterday at the Lincoln Memorial on this day of service and how you are honoring the work and life of Dr. Martin Luther King, how tomorrow should be talked about in schools all over this country and whether everybody should turn on the television in all classrooms at the inaugural ceremony and to hear President-elect Obama's speech tomorrow, what this election means, whether or not it's comparable to the election of Nelson Mandela, what about the partisanship that has existed in this country, will we be able to work together now, and what about the enormity of the tasks, the economy and the wars and people losing their jobs. This is not an easy time, certainly, to be president. Our number 800-486-8655, and our guest here on the Ideas Network is Professor Kalaiba Brown-Dean, Professor of Political Science and African American Studies at Yale University. And we're welcoming your phone calls. We go to Jeff from Lake Geneva next. Hi, Jeff. Jeff, are you there? Yeah, Jeff is gone. Mike from Whitefish Bay. Hi, Mike.
Good morning.
Hello.
Morning.
It's always fun to speculate on alternate history, you know, like what if the assassination of Hitler had succeeded, so forth and so on. What do you think would have happened if Dr. King hadn't been murdered and become such a profound martyr for his cause?
Wow, you don't ask easy questions, huh? No, I think it's a wonderful point, and it's something that I've thought about quite a bit over the last few weeks, to think about this being Dr. King's 80th birthday. How different would this country look if he had been able to continue his movement toward justice and for civil rights in this country? I think that we would be in a different place in this country if Dr. King had still been a part of this movement. I think that he inspired so many people during his time, and to think that his words still resonate with us, to actually have him be able to speak to that and to be a part of that, I think we would be in a different place. I don't think that 2008 may have been the year where we celebrated our first African-American president. Perhaps that would have occurred sooner. Perhaps various voices would have been included much sooner had Dr. King still be living. But I do want us to understand that, you know, I was thinking about the speech that he gave about the fierce urgency of now and the fact that for us, tomorrow is really today. A speech given in 1967 still holds just as much relevance in 2009. And so I also would hope that we're not looking for our next Dr. King, that each of us in this country sees how we can really answer the call to justice and the answer to service and become a part of that movement for positive change, even if we never have another Dr. King.
Mm. Thanks very much for the call. Jean from Denmark is next. Hi, Jean.
Hi.
Hi.
Good morning. I'm calling to talk about my service. I just got it done for this morning. I am helping to organize a food drive, but I have very mixed feelings about that. I think that I did something very, very easy and not very challenging. You know, nobody argues about food. Food is important, but it's awfully easy to do. And I just think about, you know, 2 million African-American men in prison. What can I do about that? And that's where I'm looking for leadership from the president. I think he needs to be more specific about what really needs to be done. Maybe that's a role for the First Lady. I don't know. But there's a lot of hard things that we have to do that we actually need the leadership for.
I agree with you. I think that there are big problems facing us and smaller problems that may be more manageable. But I don't want you to think that what you're doing is any less important. You know, it's not, when we talk about incarceration in this country, it's not about excusing bad behavior, but looking at the factors that lead to that bad behavior. And so for many people, the fact that they cannot feed themselves, they can't feed their families, that often leads to these petty crimes that then, you know, evolve into bigger crimes. So although you may think you're doing something simple and easy, I think what you're doing is tremendously important, and more people need to do that. Rather than looking to the government for help and looking to the government to solve all of these problems, you are being a leader in your community by taking up that mantle, and I think we need more people to do that. I agree. President Obama will need to be a strong leader, will need to set a course of action so that we know how do we tackle these big problems. But I think that each of us can also play a role in addressing some of these smaller issues so they don't become monumental problems.
Mm-hmm. I don't think you should underestimate what you've done today at all. And it is true, it sounds simplistic, but when you think of millions and millions of people doing some act of service today, of course that would make a difference, don't you think? Of course it would. And it needs to continue tomorrow and the next day and the next
right.
day.
Right. Tremendously important. Mm-hmm. And thank you for that act of service.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Jean, for your call. 800-486-8655. Tony from Madison. Hi.
Hi, Jean. I'm sorry, Kathleen. Jeez. And good morning, Professor.
Good morning.
To echo a bit of the previous caller's sentiments, what more can one do? It seems like we are entering a period by which it's going to be very easy and I think, unfortunately, very tempting for a lot of critics to resort to the simplistic ad hominems. I even hear bits of it coming out in earlier callers. One gentleman mentioned and pointed out in parentheses that someone wrote, or had described his name, Barack's name, with middle name fully visible, as if it somehow matters in whatever representation that was used in. And it seems like we're entering a period where, unless we're very careful, the fact that Barack is black is far more important than what Barack himself wants to do and what he might think about something. And I want to ask, you know, what could someone do in talking to friends and providing their views to people and sharing in those kinds of very social and very typical settings to give people the idea that you can expect to not worry about these particular arbitrary things? You know, what I don't think Barack would be any less effective had he been any other race. I think if it's the guy we voted for, it's not the color we voted for. I mean, that's how I feel. And I wonder, how can I express that to you know, how can we provide that view to more people?
Well, I think that Obama has been very clear about how he views himself, how he views himself being a part of this sort of democratic experience. To say to people, I am a candidate who is black, but I am not a black candidate. And by that meaning, I want you to see me as someone who can contribute to this country and not get caught up on my racial identity. Not that that's not a part of me, not that that is, you know, something that I don't embrace, but that I have so much to contribute to this country. My fear is that if Obama does not live up to those expectations, that there may be some individuals who say, see, that's why I told you we shouldn't have a black president, because this is why, you know, these sorts of essentialist arguments. I think that for people who don't agree with that view, don't agree with that interpretation, by simply saying to your friends when you hear those comments to challenge that and be willing to do that and not be silenced by consensus or fear of somehow going against the grain, so to speak. It's a challenge that Obama will face, but I also think it's a challenge that, you know, if Hillary Clinton had become president or Sarah Palin had become vice president, people may have made those same claims about gender. Anytime something is new, it's often uncomfortable at first, but we have to be willing and open to accept that opportunity and evaluate people for who they are, not for what they may represent.
Mm-hmm. And yet, you do have to make something of his race. This is the first African-American president in this country. He has engendered this enormous goodwill all over the world. Look at the celebrations in Kenya, for heaven's sake.
Right.
He's speaking at the Lincoln Memorial yesterday. And, of course, you're thinking of the Union almost dissolving over the issue of slavery. You're making mention of people in the White House and the White House built by slaves. Of course race is going to be there. And it seems to me as though we should take that in and say, all right, this is the country's come some way on this issue. And just the fact that he is the president, he'll be all over television for the next 4 years,
right,
that will become used to this. But I think it's fine to celebrate that right now in this country.
I don't think that we should ignore the fact that he is the first African-American president and to think about what that means for the United States, a country that is viewed as the hallmark of democracy across the world. You know, against the backdrop of all of our efforts to establish democracy abroad, this is an opportunity for us to take a step back and ask ourselves the very difficult question, have we failed to secure and protect democracy here at home? And if so, what are the consequences? I think that Obama's win is a signal that we have moved in the right direction as a country, that we're working hard to reduce the gap between the principle and the practice of democracy. We should honor that. We should celebrate it. But we should also be able to say this is Dr. King's vision fulfilled, that Obama will be evaluated and respected for what he's doing for this country as opposed to simply who he is in this country.
Yeah, well said. Thanks, Tony, for your call. Let's go to Bill from Madison. Hi, Bill.
Hello. I'll get right to it. I'm a little afraid of the Obama presidency for a couple of reasons. One, the expectations are so high, and people have, and I'm not sure that everyone who voted for him has the same expectations. All I know is that they're very high. And I think the other thing is that I think his potential to make this a much better country than it has been and make it much closer to its ideals is great. But due to everything that's gone on before, especially the last 8 years, he's basically presiding over the end of the American empire, essentially. He's presiding over America declining as a superpower, and both military and economic superpower. And there will be some people who were not going to like that and will probably blame him for it, even though, like I say, that the country itself, I think, will be a better country, but it'll be a weaker country. And I'm not sure that the mindset of the country is ready for that to happen.
That's an interesting point. Professor?
Well, I think it is a very interesting point, and I'm sure it's one that people grapple with on a daily basis. And thinking about Obama and these expectations of him, I was reminded of when Carl Stokes became the first African-American mayor in this country of a major city, when he became mayor of Cleveland. And he said that toward the end of his administration that he felt the weight of the country on his shoulders, that even though he was the mayor, he felt that people were really looking to him to make these broad changes in Cleveland and that people across the country were taking this sort of wait-and-see attitude, almost waiting for him to fail. But for him, that encouraged him to work even harder, that he didn't have the luxury of being sort of an average politician. He had to do extraordinary things. And I think that same challenge will be facing President Obama as he goes forward. But what I think is hopeful for us is that if you look at the international response to his win, I think that may be an opportunity for the United States to regain some of that international respect. If we are able to go to those countries in a respectful manner to work with them to address many of the global issues facing us, we may be able to restore that position and really make significant changes. That international presence is important, and in turn, I think, can have an impact on the domestic state of affairs as well.
More phone calls in a moment. On this day, we honor the life of Dr. Martin Luther King. It's All Things Political, and we're talking about President-elect Barack Obama and all of the festivities honoring him, and also the day of service that has been requested for everybody by the new president who will be inaugurated tomorrow, the significance of that inauguration, and all of the issues that he will have to deal with. Professor Kalaiba Brown Dean is a professor of political science and African American studies at Yale University, is our guest this hour. I'm Kathleen Dunn. Did I give you the number again? It's 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We do want to remind you that National Public Radio will be covering the inauguration, and it will start at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. So please listen to NPR's coverage on Wednesday. We will respond to all that's taking place tomorrow in Washington and around the country. 800-486-8655. Jeff from Madison is next. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, how are you doing?
Fine, how are you?
Good. I just wanted to talk about, I'm en route to Madison right now, and I've seen probably about three or so cars, several signs still that are clearly pulled out from the snow and placed so they're clearly visible on 151. And the McCain Palin signs, and I'm trying to grasp, you know, what are they trying to accomplish? I mean, what, like, you know, you were saying before, Barack Obama is saying the election's over, and I don't understand it. And Professor Dean, I mean, what would, if these people were in your class, what would you say to them? You say that you want to encourage them to think, and not tell them what to think. What would you say to them?
Well, you know, I do deal with this in my class, and I have quite a few students who have said to me, I don't understand why you're so excited about this, right? You know, I voted for McCain, my candidate didn't win, and I want to continue to let people know how I feel. And what I say to them, as I've said throughout this discussion, the election is over. We have to move forward as a country and address the issues that are facing us. You know, these issues and challenges are greater than any one candidate, one party, and one election. And we have to make a commitment to moving forward. You know, again, thinking about Dr. King, where he said that our tomorrow is today. We cannot afford to continue talking about that election or what may have happened or what some people may view should have happened. Where do we go from here? What do we do to make our country better? And if you don't like the job that President Obama is doing, you have your opportunity to voice that discontent at the next election. There are important local and state level elections that will be coming forth this year and next year. Make your voices heard then. You can still critique the job of the president without getting caught up in the politics of that election.
Here's an email that's come in. I remember after 9/11 when people were reflective, they were kind to each other. They seemed to wake from a dream and look around them and pay attention. That was a dark time. Here we have a very different and positive time, and I don't want to lose it. How do we make sure we don't lose this positive momentum?
Well, again, I hope that we realize that it's not just about this one election or this one elected official. To see the power of young people to express their political views, to make a difference and be connected to the process. Now is the time for other political officials, you know, whether it's campaigns, organizations, appointed officials, to embrace that youth voice and to really fully implement them into the process. We have to continue to exert pressure on our elected and appointed officials, but to also understand that politics just isn't about those traditional electoral arenas, that talking about the issues, making our voices heard, doing those acts that some may view as small, and again, to me, holding a food drive is a monumental thing.
Sure.
Those are all acts of insurgency. Those are all acts of power that need to continue and need to persist beyond an election time. I want that energy to be sustained, but it can only be sustained if we commit ourselves to it.
Thanks, Jeff, for your call. Let's go to Ruth from Madison. Hi, Ruth.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you for this show. And I so agree with what your guest just said about the acts needing to continue. And if a person needs another reason, I would bring the Bible into it, and I'm sorry I don't have the exact quotation, but I think it's in Matthew, but where Jesus was saying to, that they would you know, one that, well, it's like, well, when, Lord, when did we deny thee? And he said, when I was hungry and you fed me not, when I was naked and you clothed me not, when I was in prison and you visited me not. And so, you know, if for no other reason than for Christians to see that, that we need to do this because Christ said we need to, you know, to look out for, when we're looking out for the least among us, we are looking out for him. And I wanted to bring into this, like, Madison Urban Ministry and also Dane County United Way both have prisoner reentry projects, where if a person is afraid to visit someone in prison, or if you just can't get on somebody's list to be, to visit them while they are in prison, to help them return home, to help them not go back to prison. And these are things that are set up, programs that are set up where six people at a time will meet with a former prisoner, never one at a time, never, ever one at a time, and to pool the resources that you have to teach someone how to live within a budget, to teach somebody how to make choices, the cell phone or the rent, you know, or if I get the cell phone, then I won't be able to pay the rent, or if I get this apartment, then I won't be able to get a car, and I'll need, or I'll need to work 56 hours to be able to afford the, you know, just common sense things that people aren't always taught. And you just bring your common sense into these groups to meet with former prisoners to help them to understand what they need to do to walk that straight and narrow path. Mm-hmm.
Let us know more about the program, Ruth. We can do a show on it, certainly. Well, there's a good act of service, Professor Brown-Dean.
There you go. Everyday acts.
You got it. Thanks very much for your call. Peter is next from Madison. Hello, Peter.
Yeah, good morning.
Good morning.
I guess I come from it from a different point of view. It seems like I just don't remember this positive, let's get behind our president. He's our president during the last two elections. I mean, all I've heard on this station, you know, in the last 4 years or 8 years has been hate. And any time you move to criticize Obama or to, I mean, on policy issues, on be it what you don't agree with them on, you know, being called a racist would be the least of my problems. I mean, nobody has questioned him on his politics. I mean, he had two sit-down interviews with the press this week, and both of them started with, well, can you believe the enormity of the inauguration tomorrow? You know, not talking about his policies or his tactics, and I just don't see anybody willing to take it on to have an open debate for fear of being labeled, you know, a hate monger.
Well, he hasn't started yet, though, Peter. He hasn't.
It might be just wrong to close off the debate just because of the color of a man's skin.
Yeah, I don't. I think there's going to be a lot of debate as the time goes on.
I think there already has been a great deal of debate, and I think that debate needs to continue. You know, I don't think that democracy demands consensus in any form, and I think that we make the greatest advances in this country when we're willing to ask ourselves the tough questions and disagree with one another. I think that makes us better. It makes us more aware of the challenges and issues that we're confronting, but also we make better decisions when we do consider the opposite side and include that in how we order ourselves. I think that the problem, however, is, you know, as you stated, he hasn't started yet. And I think we need to separate the magnitude of the inauguration and sort of what that represents for the United States historically and going forward from Barack Obama as the chief in the United States, as the commander-in-chief. So that we can celebrate the inauguration, celebrate this moment, what this means in terms of how far we've come. But then tomorrow, when he takes formal office, then the task is upon him to govern effectively. Mm-hmm. I think we should question that. I don't think we should give anyone a pass to sort of do what they will just because of who they are.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we need to watch what he's going to do, to hold him to task so that he's carrying out what he's actually committed to doing. But to, again, be open and willing to allow him to govern as opposed to cutting off any sort of consideration of, you know, the possibility that he could be successful.
Yeah. Well, we've lived in a very divided time, and I do want to defend us and say there isn't any hate emanating from this show. I mean, we do, I think, quite the opposite. And but it has been a time of low approval for a president and hope for something different on the part of a lot of Americans. It'll be interesting to see if all of that can be brought together. Professor, thank you so much for being with us on this day in particular. It was a great hour. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Professor Kalaiba Brown, Dean, Professor of Political Science and African American Studies at Yale University. And we'd like to thank Rhonda Fanning for producing this program and also thank Rob Schroeder for on-air production. We end with a tribute to Dr. Martin Luther King.
America! Singing something like this. Listen here. Oh, beautiful, far spacious skies, far amber waves of grain, far purple mountain majesties.
Ray Charles and his beautiful arrangement of America the Beautiful. We have news coming up from National Public Radio, and we'll return and have another Monday conversation about the value of a liberal arts education. First, the latest news.